It's not all over. Nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
Come on, John. Can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time. This whole thing to work for the people.
And nobody's closing me out of my business.
We will be able to win. Finally, as we struggle, we do not struggle alone. God, sometimes it's difficult. In the deep south, facing all of the violence and all of the suffering, that is something that consoles us along the way. We are convinced that our cause is right. I'm returned to Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, not in despair, not in bitterness. I return knowing that we are moving into a right there freedom. We, through our struggle, through our to achieve the American dream, this will be the day when all of God's children, black men and white,
Zoe?
Jews and Christians.
Zoe?
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 Yeah.
Thank you. to John Lee's crew.
Anything better than that one?
Right, then.
It is time to begin.
See if he has come to his senses.
we were hunters and foragers. The frontier was everywhere. We were bounded only by the earth and the ocean and the sky. The open road still softly calls. Our little terraqueous globe is the madhouse of those hundred thousand millions of worlds. We who cannot even put our own planetary home in order, riven with rivalries and hatreds, are we to venture out into space? By the time we're ready to settle even the nearest other planetary systems, we will have changed. The simple passage of so many generations will have changed us. Necessity will have changed us. We're an adaptable species. It will not be we who reach Alpha Centauri and the other nearby stars. It will be a species very like us, but with more of our strengths and fewer of our weaknesses. More confident, far-seeing, capable, and prudent. For all our failings, despite our limitations and fallibilities, we humans are capable of greatness. What new wonders, undreamt of in our time, will we have wrought in another generation and another? How far will our nomadic species have wandered by the end of the next century and the next millennium? Our remote descendants, safely arrayed on many worlds through the solar system and beyond, will be unified by their common heritage, by their regard for their home planet, and by the knowledge that whatever other life may be, the only humans in all the universe come from Earth. They will gaze up and strain to find the blue dot in their skies. They will marvel at how vulnerable the repository of all our potential once was, how perilous our infancy, how humble our beginnings, how many rivers we had to cross before we found our way.
Time, leave me be. book was never meant to be hidden away behind walls, locked away from the world which inspired its creation. Brendan, you must take the book to the people so that they may have hope. Let it light the way in these dark days of the North.
Shouldn't have. This is all I have left. It is the only comfort I have in this world. Brother Aiden was right. And I tried to stop him.
Aiden never paid you much heed, Uncle.
I suppose not.
Brother Aiden lived to see his work passed on and completed.
Thank you. Completely, you have misunderstood us. You have seen fit to surround yourself and household with armed guards as though, forsooth, we were common criminals, apt to break in upon you and wrest away by force your 20 million. Believe us, this is farthest from our intention. You will readily comprehend, after a little sober thought, that your life is dear to us. Do not be afraid. We would not hurt you for the world. It is our policy to cherish you tenderly and protect you from all harm. Your death means nothing to us. If it did, rest assured that we would not hesitate a moment in destroying you. Think this over, Mr. Hale. When you have paid us our price, there will be need of retrenchment. Dismiss your guards now. and cut down your expenses. Within 10 minutes of the time you receive this, a nurse girl will have been choked to death in Brentwood Park. The body may be found in the shrubbery lining the path which leads off to the left from the bandstand. Cordially yours, the Minions of Midas.
The next instant, Mr. Hale was at the telephone, warning the inspector of the impending murder. The inspector excused himself in order to call up police substation F and dispatch men to the scene. 15 minutes later, he rang us up and informed us that the body had been discovered yet warm in the place indicated. The evening papers teemed with glaring Jack the Strangler headlines denouncing the brutality of the deed and complaining about the laxity of the police. We were also closeted with the inspector, who begged us by all means to keep the affair secret. Success, he said, depended upon silence. As you know, John, Mr. Hale was a man of iron. He refused to surrender. Oh, John, it was terrible, nay, horrible. This awful something, this blind force in the dark. We could not fight, could not plan, could do nothing save hold our hands and wait. And week by week, as certain as the rising of the sun, came the notification and death of some person, man or woman, innocent of evil, but just as much killed by us as though we had done it with our own hands. A word from Mr. Hale, and the slaughter would have ceased. But he hardened his heart and waited. The lines deepening, the mouth and eyes growing sterner and firmer, and the face aging with the hours. It is needless for me to speak of my own suffering during that frightful period. Find here the letters and telegrams of the Amavan and the newspaper account, etc., of the various murders. You will notice also the letters warning Mr. Hale of certain machinations of commercial enemies and secret manipulations of stock. The M&M seemed to have its hand on the inner pulse of the business and financial world. They possessed themselves of and forwarded to us information which our agents could not obtain. One timely note from them, at a critical moment in a certain deal, saved all $5 million to Mr. Hale. At another time, they sent us a telegram which probably was the means of preventing an anarchist crank from taking my employer's life. We captured the man on his arrival and turned him over to the police, who found upon him enough of a new and powerful explosive to sink a battleship. We persisted. Mr. Hale was grit clear through. He disbursed at the rate of 100,000 per week for Secret Service. The aid of the Pinkertons and countless private detective agencies was called in. And in addition to this, thousands were upon our payroll. Our agents swarmed everywhere, in all guises, penetrating all classes of society. They grasped at a myriad clues. Hundreds of suspects were jailed, and at various times, thousands of suspicious persons were under surveillance. But nothing tangible came to light. With its communications, the M&M continually changed its method of delivery. And every messenger they sent us was arrested forthwith. But these inevitably proved to be innocent individuals, while their descriptions of the persons who had employed them for the errand never tallied. On the last day of December, we received this notification.
Office of the M&M, December 31, 1899. Mr. Eben Hale, Money Baron. Dear Sir, pursuant of our policy, with which we flatter ourselves you are already well versed, we beg to state that we shall give a passport from this Vale of Tears to Inspector Buying, with whom, because of our attentions, you have become so well acquainted. It is his custom to be in his private office at this hour. Even as you read this, he breathes his last. Cordially yours, the Minions of Midas.
I dropped the letter and sprang to the telephone. Great was my relief when I heard the inspector's hearty voice. But even as he spoke, his voice died away in the receiver to a gurgling sob, and I heard faintly the crash of a falling body. And a strange voice followed me, sent me the regards of the M&M, and broke the switch. Like a flash, I called up the public office of the Central Police, telling them to go at once to the inspector's aide in his private office. I then held the line, and a few minutes later received the intelligence that he had been found bathed in his own blood and breathing his last. There were no eyewitnesses, and no trace was discoverable of the murderer. Whereupon Mr. Hale immediately increased his secret service till $250,000 flowed weekly from his coffers. He was determined to win out. His graduated rewards aggregated over 10 millions. You have a fair idea of his resources, and you can see in what manner he drew upon them. It was the principle, he affirmed, that he was fighting for, not the gold. And it must be admitted that his course proved the nobility of his motive. The police departments of all the great cities cooperated, and even the United States government stepped in, and the affair became one of the highest questions of state. Certain contingent funds of the nation were devoted to the unearthing of the MFM, and every government agent was on the alert. But it was all in vain. The minions of Midas carried on their damnable work unhampered. They had their way and struck unerringly. But while he fought to the last, Mr. Hale could not wash his hands of the blood with which they were dyed. Though not technically a murderer, though no jury of his peers would have convicted him, nonetheless, the death of every individual was due to him. As I said before, a word from him and the slaughter would have ceased. But he refused to give that word. He insisted that the integrity of society was assailed, that he was not sufficiently a coward to desert his post, and that it was manifestly just that a few should be martyred for the ultimate welfare of the many. Nevertheless, this blood was upon his head, and he sank into a deeper and deeper gloom. I was likewise whelmed with the guilt of an accomplice. Babies were ruthlessly killed, children, aged men. And not only were these murders local, but they were distributed over the country. In the middle of February, one evening, as we sat in the library, there came a sharp knock at the door. On responding to it, I found lying on the carpet the following epistle.
Office of the M of M, February 15, 1900. Mr. Goodman, Moneybag. Dear sir, does not your soul cry out on the lead harvest that is needed? Perhaps we have been too abstract in conducting our business. Let us now be concrete. Miss Adelaide Laidlaw is a talented young woman, as good, we understand, as she is beautiful. She is the daughter of your old friend, Judge Laidlaw, and we happen to know that you carried her in your arms when she was an infant. She is your daughter's closest friend and at present is visiting her. When your eyes have read thus far, our visit will have terminated. Very cordially, the minions of Midas.
My God! Did we not instantly realize the terrible import? We rushed through the day rooms. She was not there. And on to our own apartments. The door was locked, but we crashed it down by hurling ourselves against it. There she lay, just as she had finished dressing for the opera, smothered with pillows torn from the couch. The plush of life, yet on her flesh, the body, still flexible and warm. Let me pass over the rest of this horror. You will surely remember, John, the newspaper accounts. Late that night, Mr. Hale summoned me to him, and before God did pledge me most solemnly to stand by him and not to compromise, even if all kith and kin were destroyed. The next day, I was surprised at his cheerfulness. I had thought he would be deeply shocked by this last tragedy. How deep?